Get started. What I'd like to do is go around and have my two council members who are here with me today to introduce themselves. So we'll start with my left.
Good afternoon to everyone. Tyrona Clark Murray, City Council, District 9.
Okay. And I'm Councilwoman Jacoby Pittman, District 10.
And I'm Councilmember Ken Amaro, District 1.
Okay, so let's jump in. As I said earlier, our committee had a charge of developing updates for the JSEP program, and we were charged by Councilmember Hazuri and followed up by Councilmember Newby. And so there were some things that the council members had requested, but at the time we had to do Jason Mason Tillman's study, and also we had some recommendations by Lasekia Hodges. And so we're at that point where, one, we did not want to forget the request that was asked before everything sunset. And so I just kind of want to wrap it up for my responsibilities that was asked from me. And on the committee, we had Councilmember Freeman and Councilmember Garrett. And so from that, as a follow-up, I had asked Ms. Mason and her team to put together a presentation, as well as Ms. Hodges. So we're gonna go ahead and get started. Ms. Hodges, if you would come up and give us an overview and history of the JSEP program and where we are now and what may have been some recommendations legislative-wise. And thank you for being here today.
Yes. Absolutely, thank you for having me. So Lasekia Hodges, Office of General Counsel. So as many of you may know, just a very high level history, we have had the JSEP program in place probably for about over 12 years now. And it started back in the 1980s. I wanna say it was under Hazuri, where it was the minority set aside programs. You might be used to hearing that terminology. And then we had a string of, you know, legal cases, constitutional laws that said we pretty much couldn't have the minority set-aside programs that were race-based. And so we had to sort of reconfigure those programs at that time. And that's really what led us to our current JSEB, Jacksonville Small and Emerging Business Program, that ensued from litigation, quite frankly. So the Jacksonville Small and Emerging Business Program is a race-neutral program, so we do not take race into account. Over the years since I've been with the Office of General Counsel, we've had a succession of council members that's tweaked it here and there. As Councilwoman Pittman said, in 2020, we formed this special committee. We had about, I guess, 6 to 8 meetings, sort of the sausage-making of the bill. And then finally, in April of 2021, the council enacted legislation to implement some of those recommendations that came out of the special committee. The bill is probably like 30 pages. A lot of it was reorganization, trying to make it just friendlier for our customers or business entities, if you will, that do business with the city. So a lot of it was just reorganizing it in that way, but some of the highlights that came out of the special committee's work was making a determination on what's called the disparities report. And so I just mentioned you can have two types of programs, race neutral or race based. And with all of the legal case law that came out of the 80s into the 90s, it's not that you cannot have a race based program. If you have a race based program, you've got to have the evidence to back it up. And the evidence to back it up, so when I say back it up, I mean the justification to implement such a program is what's called the disparities report. And this is all linked to case law that's been in place. But the disparities report that we had back in 2010, we had a disparities report performed.
And the disparities report was looking at two things. It was looking at recommendations with respect to a race-based program, but it was also reviewing the current race-neutral program that we had in place at the time. But with disparities reports, and if you would understand, whenever we enact anything that's race-specific, we've got to have that justification. And if we're doing it based on evidence and data, that data has to be updated. And so and consulting with our Mason Tillman, as Councilwoman Pittman mentioned, what we were told is that the disparities report was going to essentially expire in 2023. So our office's counsel to the special committee at the time was, if we want to begin to explore anything that's race-based, we've got to have updated data. Otherwise, you can ensure lawsuits will ensue. So out of the special committee, there was at least the determination that was made to go ahead and update the study that we had most recently in place, the 2010-2013 study. And so Dinah Mason and her team has been working with our consultant to get that study updated. And she can talk to you a little bit about where they are on that. Pursuant to our code changes that were made, that study had to be completed by the end of August. And then we had a 6-month period to sort of come back to the city council with some recommendations based out of that study. So that was one really big highlight of the committee's charge. The committee also looked at ways with respect to training and education of small business programs, ways to partner with access to capital, that it went in and refined and really tried to make those areas of training and access to capital and bonding more appropriate and really more effective for these small businesses. The only last point I'll make is that in this same discussion, we began to talk about personal net worth, which Ms. Mason will probably get into, but one of the eligibility criteria in order for you to participate in the program is you've got to have no more than a certain amount of personal net worth. And that has been a pretty contentious issue. When the council passed the Pittman Special Committee's recommendation, it decided basically to put a moratorium on the use of that criterion, and that that moratorium is in place 6 months after the time that our disparity study is complete. So that's something I think Ms. Mason can give you a little bit more detail on, because we had the consultant look at that one criterion and give us some recommendations as to what we should do with it. Should we keep it? Should we use a more updated marker when it comes to trying to determine who should be able to participate in the program? And then the last thing I'll mention is we also came out with a tiering program that enabled Ms. Mason and her team to not just look at sort of a litmus small business, large business, but really kind of tier it so that you could have very small business grow using the tools that were in the code in a more staged process. And so that's what you refer to as the tiering program. So that is, by code, once we get the disparities report, you'll expect to get some sort of assessment from Ms. Mason and her team, and then you would, as a city council, decide what you want to do with that information, what you want to do with the disparities report. Do you want to move in the direction of anything race-based, or do you want to move in the direction of taking the recommendations on the race-neutral program and implement those recommendations from the consultant? So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to Ms. Mason.
Good afternoon. Thank you all for allowing me to be here to give you this presentation. I'm going to give you all an overview of what I call the road to success, what our challenges were, and the current state of the program. Lasekia, Ms. Hodges, gave you guys a brief history of the JCEP program, and each of you have in front of you a deck that has all of the information in which I'm going to talk about. And the deck for me is like a point of reference. So I'll give a high level review and not read the slides. And also you have what I will, as Ms. Hodges referenced, the personal net worth. and that is from Mason Tillman. Their what their opinion is, as well as a curriculum of our education program. So not to go over the whole thing, just to make sure that I could provide that information for everybody to see. So Ms. Hodges gave you a brief overview of the history. And so with that and the program going from an MBE program to a race neutral program, and up until in 2020, when we began to work with the council committee with Councilwoman Pittman, these are the findings in which came out of that committee. And the committee, when we met, it also included citizens and their opinions as well. So in the study, in the committee, some of the findings that came out of the issues were concerns with bonding, as well as access to capital, education and training, the capacity of the program, as well as the graduated tier program, which I'll get a little bit more into, as well as Mason Tillman, the disparity study, which Ms. Hodges mentioned. I was requested to give a 100-day report, which we talked to Councilwoman Pittman, we met and we gave her an overview of the things that we had completed in the first 100 days. And these are some of those things. When I first went into the office, one of the things that we did was to do a SWOT analysis, to do a complete assessment of the office. It was like 318 files in the program at that time. Some of the JCELs were active. We found about maybe, I would say, approximately more than 100 JCELs were actually active, but we reviewed the files to look at them so we could do the SWOT analysis, which is look at the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, and the threats within that office. So looking at what was there and looking at the ordinance to make sure that we were following the committee's recommendations, one thing we looked at was the application. There's a lot of complaints about the application. A lot of people feel like it's too long. But the issue with the application is with any program that's a specialized program that you're going into, and then you're also asking the city to trust you as a small business and to be able to do contract work and that you are a responsible person, there are certain things that we need to be able to get and see that you are, and that's from state records, any local type records, and taxes. So all those things and finances to make sure that you qualify to be in the program. It's not easy to shorten that, but we did go in and we looked at it and see what we could do. So we did do some updates to the application that made it slimmed it down, but it didn't dumb it down, because that's the one thing that we can't do when it comes to allowing businesses to come in and do work on city projects. We revamped the website as much as we could. There's limitations to what you can do, but it may be some changes in the future with the new administration. We also established the area and meeting room for our JCEBs. So if a lot of JCEBs and they knew they come up, they have problems with the application, we want to make sure we gave them a space where they could feel comfortable if they needed to sit and work with us, but not make them feel like they were in the way. So that was something that we did. In the ordinance, we followed what's called brick and mortar. This was not happening when I went in the office in 2021. They had suspended doing that, going to site visits, but we reignited that because that's something that's extremely important, because we don't know a business is a business if we don't go out and do a site visit and be able to see what type of business that they're actually doing, and to be able to know that the commodity in which they're asking us to certify them for, that's something that they're actually performing. We did find that some of the businesses that were actually certified in certain commodities, when we went out to the business, they weren't. They weren't a business that was actually doing what they said they were doing. Some of them were pass-throughs and actually, you know, or they were working with someone else and not actually doing the work that they said. So those people we actually did decertify, but that just showed the importance of why that's something that we need to do. We actually had fun. We did a video doing business with the city of Jacksonville, because many of our small businesses, one of the biggest challenges is understanding how to come into the city of Jacksonville and do business. And it could be a little intimidating trying to understand the procurement code, trying to understand how you bid, understand how, you know, certification works with all that. So we did a video that's actually a class that we recommend, and that is a mandate for each JSEB that comes in to look at it and to take a test. And some, we got a little mumblings, but each person after they went through was very happy that they did, because it did teach them a lot and help them to guide through doing business with the city of Jacksonville. We also had fun with doing an advertisement campaign throughout the city, through each county line. We had advertisements that went all over, and it actually worked out very well for us. We had a, I would say maybe around 10 or so, and I may have to get back to you with that number, because I don't want to be stating the wrong number, but that was the about amount of people that came through and became JSEBs, and they let us know they saw the advertisements around town or when they was going back to their respective counties. So that was something that we implemented in the 100 day. Another concern was the Access to Capital program. So the Access to Capital program is a program that started back in 2004. The program was originally started, and it came out of committee findings when, at the time in 2004, Mayor Payton put a committee together asking, when we went from the MBE to the JSEB program, what did the community want to see? What were some of the biggest challenges? One of those challenges was the Access to Capital program. That was actually Access to Capital. Small businesses, a lot of them didn't qualify for traditional lending. And so what we did, we went out and we spoke to several banks, and they actually gave us funding that equaled up to about $1.2 million. So that small businesses that came into the JSEB program and they got a contract with either the city of Jacksonville, JTA, JEA, or Jacksport, or even with a prime contractor, that they could have money to help them with their startup when they got to the site, or even help them with payroll. And the way it worked, they would we would look at the contract, we would see how much the contract was, and they would ask to borrow a certain amount. We worked with them because we didn't want them to overborrow where they couldn't be successful in the program and with their project and not be able to get some type of overhead or a profit margin. And so it had to make sense, and they had 6 months to a year to pay it back, and the loans were from $5,000 to $150,000, and the interest rate could not go higher than 5%, because it was not a traditional banking loan. It was for non-traditional lending. Currently, the Access to Capital program is housed in EBO, and we are administering that program, but we are not alone. We're not bankers. And so my recommendation is that we find a, like a CDFI, a nonprofit CDFI, to be able to come in and take over the program, because at the time when it was first created, it was not in the city of Jacksonville. It was actually with Cleve Warren, with the he had the JEDCO at the time, and Essential Capital. He changed the name to Essential Capital, and they actually managed the contracts. We managed the contracts. They actually managed the funding. And so when a JSEB got a loan and it was time for them to be paid, the city would do a joint check. A representative from Essential Capital would pick up the money, they would deposit it into their account, and the same day they would write a check back to the vendor to make sure that money wasn't being held up in that process. And it worked out very well. It was very successful. Currently, there's $891,167 $1.56 in the program now, and we have two loans out that should both be completely paid by September. When those loans come in, the actual dollar amount that will be in the access to capital account will be $905,778.51. And this is funding to be able for our JSEPs to get that when they get on projects, even if it's with another agency, JTA, JEA. So the funding is there and the support is there, but I would, again, highly recommend that we can find someone to manage that. We have put it out on the street like three times. We did not get anyone, so we may have to work with procurement and see if there's another way that we can, you know, possibly get someone to come in. We're actually speaking with someone, but it's more, it's not specialized as, say, CDFI, but the program itself is specialized in a way, because you have to have someone who's working, who used to work with microloans and working with small businesses and have programs that fit these small businesses.
Asking a question, because I might have a junior senior moment
yes, ma'am.
That I may forget. But what I wanted to ask, this has been done before and it has been successful when the city doesn't engage in that part. Is that correct?
Yes.
And have you had an opportunity to see what it would take, or maybe what were some of the issues, or do you know some of the issues of why we haven't been able to find anyone?
Well, I would say the city does have CDFIs here, but I think because it's a small business program and it's something that's unique to a CDFI, not just loaning money. It's not about loaning money and using their own programs that they have or products that they have. Uh-huh. It's very specialized to lending to just the small businesses and understanding those needs and how to work with those small businesses. And I think that might be more of the reason that we need to get somebody who has that acumen and understanding of working with the small businesses. A liaison would be attached to that, because when the program first initially came about, I was the person that administered that program for the city. And I worked hand in hand with Essential Capital and made sure that, you know, that contracts were completed, that finance and administration was aware that there need to be joint checks, and to be able to guide the JSEPs over to Essential Capital. That's very important, that a liaison is going to have to be attached to it to work with the consultant. So I think those things in itself make it specialized to where a regular CDFI may not want to deal with it. But if we can find one that has, and we've talked to someone, and that they're actually at Beaver Street that could possibly do this. And they have a small business program. They work with small businesses. They're doing it now. And they are, and they were in banking. So they actually have all the box to checks, very similar to what Cleve Warren was when he had it. So I think that somebody, you know, and again, working it out to make sure that we are following the guidelines of procurement, that could possibly be worked out.
Okay. And it's definitely needed in order for the business to be able to do additional money by having the access to capital. So, all right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Again, this is just basically what I just went over with you all, and the fact that, again, a liaison would be important to this, and if we could get it moved, it would be great. There is some funding that goes with that that was moved in the last administration that needs to be moved back, because there was $300,000 there that supported the Access to Capital program. Mm-hmm. So that is funding that needs to come back, because you've got to get a consultant to be able to manage it. Another part of the management was that the consultant, the interest rate that would come out of the borrowing, that would go to the consultant for their administrative help.
And that's not available right now?
Those funds are not there right now, but that is something that I'm asking and recommending that those funds be put back so that we could move forward with getting that moved out of the office.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We also had an opportunity to do a continued education program that was one of the concerns of building capacity within the small businesses. And one of the ways to build capacity is just to make sure that we had a robust technical program. There was training within the JSEB office when I got there, but the training was more akin to OSHA, that type training, and it was being used. JSEBs were training their own personnel from their companies were being trained, and it wasn't being spread out among the JSEBs to benefit the whole community. Therefore, we took some of those funds away, and we began to work with UNF, and we built out an education program. I have set a copy of the education program curriculum and the criteria and how we created that education program for the small businesses. One of the major projects we did in creating the curriculum was working with UNF and developing program through their PTAC office, which is their procurement technical assistance office. And what we did there, the importance of those programs was to teach our small businesses about federal funding. A lot of our small businesses are certified with the JSEB office, but they're not certified when it comes to state and federal. And so the PTEC program allowed one of our JSEBs, when we first started, to get into the program. And as she was in the program, she learned about federal contracting. And her learning about federal contracting, when she found out, she went out and she filled out a bid to try to get federal work. And she was successful. She actually got a $1 million contract with the federal government, actually providing meat to the prison system in the state of Louisiana. So that program in itself showed the success that it could be for those who go through, get the education, and then they apply it. So we are very proud that that happened, and so it gives many opportunities to where our small businesses don't have to just fish in one pond.
Right.
Because to be honest with you, many of our small businesses are not businesses that fit into the city mold of the CIP or the general fund where they can't do business with the city, but the federal government has a much wider gamut as well as the state. And so teaching them how to fish in those ponds and giving them that direction, it now gives them an opportunity to be able to get contracting in other places.
And how long is the program?
The program is a 6-month program, and it's not every day. They go in once a month and meet out at UNF, and it's like an hour, I think like maybe 2 hours, but it doesn't take up their whole day because we have to be considerate. They're still businesses, and they still have to operate. So those that went, they have explored many of those opportunities, and they're very excited about what it can do with the future.
Is it something that we pay for, or
it is.
They pay for?
We pay for it.
And how much is that program?
That program, I think, is approximately $48,000.
$48,000?
Yes, and we have 20 participants.
And you only have just a few going through that, $48,000?
Yeah, well, $48,000, but we have 20 people that go through every 6 months.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. And we also partnered with the Hispanic Chamber. Okay. And the African American Chamber in a way of advertising and trying to get more awareness out in the public about the JSEB program and the things we're doing, especially on the technical side, that we partnered and we gave them 5 slots each for 1 year to be able to come in and let their participants in their chamber to come in and to get that education. And so that has been a very successful project as well. Okay. Another thing we added on education in the initial, when you came in as a JSAB, all you did was complete an application. So we made the change to where it's not just completing an application, but you have to also provide a business plan, a financial plan, and a continued education plan. These things allowed us to be able to view the people that was coming into the JSAB program, help us create the needs of those small businesses to see what they needed, what technical programs that we would be able to put in, and which ones would benefit them. And so this has also allowed us to work even better with contractors or these primes of these developers that come in, because when they provide, they either provide a capability statement or a business plan, but we ask for the capability statement as well, because the capability statement gives a clip of what the business can do, but it allow us to be able to provide those that are the responsive bidders that can actually take on those large projects without them going through a whole list of the JSEBs and getting frustrated that these, you know, our list has 300 people that's out there on the internet. Some of them have just started and they don't know who start and who don't start and who has the years of service that can actually do the work. So what we do, we provide those capability statements to them. And we know a little bit more about those businesses based upon the requirements that we're asking for now.
I want to ask, because I know a lot of you doing a lot of new things since we've met. Have you, since that our last meeting, have had any of the small JSEBs partner together to apply for a larger contract with the city?
No, we haven't been able to get that quite going. We have talked to JSEBs about partnering. Some of them have tried. I think that we may have had one that tried to come in and do partnering on a landscaping. They did not win that bid, but that's something that we do encourage. Okay. We don't push the joint venture as much, because with joint ventures, you actually have to become a company. Yeah, a lot of people think, you know, they say joint venture, just come together. But as a joint venture, you have to actually form a company, form the corporation, just like, you know, it's your regular business. So it takes a little bit more in doing that. And a lot of the small businesses don't really have that to do. We also brought back the mentoring program. So we're asking our larger companies to mentor our smaller JSEB firms. Mm-hmm. We just connected one of our JSEBs with the contractor who has the janitorial contract now is going to be mentoring one of our smaller JSEBs, and they're called Man-Made, and they will be working with them. They've going to give them a contract, give them a building, and they're going to work with them and mentor them as a small business to help them to be able to get better and to start getting larger contracts, and just showing them how to be successful in different ways that they haven't maybe thought of. So we're excited about that, and they are actually going to be meeting next week, finalizing all the documents. Bonding was also a concern. We're actually in negotiations right now with a bonding firm that's going to come in, and we have about maybe 110 JSEBs that would be affected by bonding that cannot, that needs it. And so this company is going to come in, provide financial education. Also, they will have relationships with bonding firms that they can provide to the JSEBs that can help them get bonding. Now, on some of the city projects, there's a J bill that from $250,000 to $500,000 as a small business with the city, you do not have to bond. But anything over $500,000, you do have to bond. And so some of our JSEBs, as they are growing, they need bonding to be able to get into larger contracts, and they don't have access to that. So we're providing a consultant that's going to be able to help them to get bonding. We have insurance program review, and that's basically through our risk management office, where we would work with risk management. They would give us insurance costs to be able to say what, you know, they have for JSEBs that can help them in their companies with insurance. Yes, ma'am.
Do you need me to talk into the mic? Do you mic are you recording or anything?
So, Ms. Mason, I thought I knew what bonding was until you went to this page that says insurance. So I'm gonna need you to, as I do not have a business background, I have an education background. So if you would explain just very briefly, explain bonding to me, because my colleagues may know, but Clark Murray doesn't know,
okay.
So I wanna know.
Well, bonding is when when you are a contractor and you are getting on, say for instance, you got a contract for $2.5 million. And the company, you got it with the city. The city wants you to bond the contract. The reason it's like a, the bond is like an insurance, but it bonds you to be able to perform the work. But say if something happens to you and you can't finish the job, what happens, because you are bonded, there, that bonding company is going to come in. They're going to take over the project, and they're going to finish the project where it's not going to have a cost to the city. So if you're not bonded, and say the one that I told you about, the J bill, say you got a $500,000 contract and you didn't get bonded, so now you didn't perform. So that's exactly it. So now you didn't get bonded. You're not, you didn't get bonded. The city says we're going to carry that bond for you because of the small price. But what happens there is, say the city paid you $300,000 of that $500,000. Now the project is not complete. You didn't do well. And now the city has to make up for what you did not do. And they don't get their money back. So if the $300,000 is lost, and say I have to come in and be the company that's going to now take over, if the bonding company selects me as the company and I work with them to take over the project, I'm not going to insure anybody else's work. I'm not going to warranty your work because I don't know what you did. So it doesn't matter what you paid them. This is what you got to pay me. So now you're going to end up being paid double for a project that should have cost you $500,000 that now costs you $1 million. But if I bonded, that bond company would come in and make up where you don't have a loss.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. The insurance is not the bonding. Those are two different things. It's just the insurance is with the risk management to kind of give us an idea of what some good rates are for small businesses. Now I'm going to briefly talk about the TIER program. The TIER program.
My favorite part.
Yes. That was one of the charges with the committee, that we develop a TIER program. The TIER program was somewhat put on hold because we could develop the program with the first and the second tier, but the third tier was kind of hard to build out because we had the personal net worth issue that was there, and the personal net worth is the $1.32 million. So now that there is a actual decision, or I would say a recommendation, we can now possibly look at moving the personal net worth out of the way and look at business revenue instead. And each of you have a copy of the personal net worth that decision made by Mason Tillman, and it gives you some very detailed information and data and how they came up with the reasons that we shouldn't have the personal net worth. But the Lasikia's kind of talked about it a little bit. The personal net worth in the initials back in 84 when they started the program, it was $450,000. Now, I don't know the reason why and there was nothing that showed us anything of why the personal net worth would have been $450,000. but that's what it was initially. And then in 2004, it was increased to 750,000. And then later on, it was increased to 1.32 million. Now, SBA personal net worth was 1.32. So I don't know if that's the reason that it was something that they looked at, because it was already being done. But I'm not sure, because there's nothing in that I could find that give us why the personal net worth was that amount. And as you know, in 2023, it was suspended. Well, I'm sorry, in 2021, it was suspended because of the request to increase the personal net worth. But we didn't have enough data to say, yes, let's increase it. Because, again, I didn't know why they increased it in the first times that they actually increased it. So Mason Tillman has given us a recommendation, and they feel that the personal net worth should be permanently suspended. They feel that it is more of a hindrance for small businesses, and that, as you can see, they feel that it is a it eliminates discrimination for some of the small businesses, that they feel that if you're looking at personal net worth, it doesn't have anything to do with business. It had everything to do with the personal, you know, what values you have in your checking account, in your IRA, and your how much your car costs, and all of those things. So they feel it should be really based upon business revenue, which is, I would agree that it should be built on business revenue and not personal net worth, but it's good to have statistical data backing you up. And then they gave the reasons also that it's not a law, mm-hmm. and in most cities they don't use personal net worth. So if the council has an appetite for removing it, because at this point it is a moratorium, but if we remove the personal net worth and we go to the business revenue, that allows us to now have the tier program, and we would base that on the gross receipts, mm-hmm. and it would be, the gross receipts would be 3 consecutive years of those gross receipts. If you are making at the highest tier, if you're making $15 million for 3 consecutive years, you're no longer a small business. Many of the small businesses, their biggest heartache is that they don't get the opportunity to become a prime. They get to a point, and once we get to this point, you cut us off and you say, we need to come out of the program, but we're not big enough yet to compete with prime contractors, and we don't have the safety net of the small business program that's allowing us to grow. And so if we move the personal net worth and we go with the tier with business revenues, that allows you to be able to look at the business dollars actually coming in their gross receipts. So in the tier one, if somebody had $3 million for 3 consecutive years, then they would grow out of the tier one program, and then they would go into the tier two program. And what we would do for those small businesses, all of the contracts were $250,000 and below, we would set those aside for those small businesses in the first tier. But the caveat there is we would have to have enough of those small businesses to set it aside, because it still has to be competitive. By state statute, we must do things in a competitive sense. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the tier two program. In tier two, it would be $7 million for the gross receipts, and we would put aside $251,000 to $500,000, and they would bid on those. But again, we'd have to have enough people in the pool to be able to do that. In tier three, we would be able to put aside $1.2 to $3 million for those set-aside projects, and then they would still, again, have to be able to provide that the competitiveness in that tier. after you complete the Tier 3 program, then that would be it. You would have to graduate out of the program. Mm-hmm. Because, again, once you reach $15 million for three consecutive years, you're no longer a small business. Mm-hmm. We are calling the program the Business Initiative Program. And this program actually already exists. It exists with the state of Florida. They have this program where they use the CCNA, which is our Consultant Negotiation Act, that says that what you have to do is have the what they consider the best of the best to be able to compete. And there's guidelines to that, and you have that in your handout. Once they meet these guidelines, then we could bring them into the Tier 3 program, but those that's in the Tier 3 also have to mentor those in the Tier 1 or Tier 2 program. And that way it helps and make the whole program a sustainable program where the Tier 3s are getting the larger contracts, but they also can bring in the Tier 1 and Tier 2 to work with them. The BDI, which is the Business Development Initiative, will allow concerns to be met regarding the JSAB contractors, their opportunity to become prime contractors, as well as allow the program to become a more sustainable program. It would also afford the larger opportunities for the Tier 3 JSABs that will be able to grow and to help us with the smaller JSABs. So I think that that's the business case for it, and it would be great to see that program adopted, and I think many of the small businesses would be pleased with that program. We are working with OGC on that language now. I've been working with them for a few months, getting it together, and they have done the research, and they've looked at, you know, can we actually do that program? Does the program fit? And we are at the stage of yes. We just need to finish codifying some language.
I want to be able to have some an opportunity for some questions. So I don't know how much more you have.
Well, let me just share? At this stage, what I'll do. I think that's the crux of what the program is, mm-hmm. of what I've told you, of mm-hmm. what we got a chance to do. Mm-hmm. As it relates to the program as a whole, it's a small business program. We have program goals. Our goals are set based upon the ordinance. The ordinance says that 20% of funds that's in the CIP or mm-hmm. 20% of funds within each department needs to be put aside to work with the small business program. Those also requirements that are in OED as well as DIA when developers come to be able to provide that information so we can have JSABs work on those as well. For the most part, the program, again, is it's a certification program. We have goals, and we're working to make sure that each department provides those goals. A lot of times there are issues with the 20%, and what the issues are, when you ask a company to say, we want 20%, and it may be a $250 million project, the $250 million may not be the number that we need to look at for the 20%, mm-hmm. but the number that we need to look at will be the number that you once you eliminate what we don't have, because we have JSEB, we don't have somebody to fit every category of what's needed. Say, for instance, elevators. We don't have anyone that can do elevators. You know, we don't have anyone that can provide rebar. So those are the larger parts of the contract. So when we don't have people that can provide those, we look at those, eliminate those, and then you look at what work JSEBs can do, mm-hmm. and then that's how you count the 20%. Mm-hmm. Because the overall project, we're not going to have enough JSEBs or JSEBs in those categories to be able to produce like that. But if you look at it holistically of what JSEBs that we do have, mm-hmm.
then that's something that can be done. Also,
in trying to make sure we obtain some goals, we, you know, if the city looks at what I came up with is an economic health initiative. And if you look at the city as a whole, because all small businesses pay taxes, and all small businesses want to have some inclusion, some kind of way with the city, even if they're not in the program. But if you have companies or, say for instance, there's organizations out there like NEMAC, the National Minority Contractors, and North Florida Builders Association, and National, the Women of Black Women in Construction. Those are persons that live in the city that have larger companies that can actually come in, and if there's an opportunity to bring them in, and they could make up where the strength of the JCL program is not. I don't know, that would be something that would have to be worked out, but that is an opportunity to look at as an initiative to be able to bring in all of the businesses that's here in Jacksonville, as well as to address some of the concerns from the administration, as well as concerns for the for some of the city council members. So, and overall, that's the JCL program. We are doing our best to try to be inclusive and find ways that we include all of our businesses in the city, as well as have a robust technical program that we can be able to provide for JCEBS. And one more thing I'd like to mention, we've partnered, we've done something different by partnering outside of the city. We did a partner with Baptist Health, and Baptist Health asked me to come in and help them as they developed their new initiative, which was a supplier diversity program. Once we completed, my ask was, would they please consider our JCEP certification in their supplier program? And they did. So if you're certified as a JCEP, all you have to do is send over your certification to Baptist Health. They will put you on their supplier list. Now you have the opportunity to go after bid and contracts with Baptist Health. So those are the things that we've done.
Well, it is now 3 o'clock, and I just want to take a few minutes to see if we have any questions. But I want to ask you one question, because every time we have either the DIA or the OED come up, and you've heard when we have big projects, and they always say that they will follow the guidelines of at least 20%. I know when the Jaguars were talking about doing Lot J, they even made a commitment to, I think, 30%. And I think now is a good time, because we got a lot of projects coming. And I want to make sure that the JCEPs have an opportunity and have the tools that they need to compete. I guess my question to you, do any of these organizations come to you to ask you for a list, or have they utilized any of the JCEP programs for, I think you mentioned also the CIP projects that are coming. Do they do a report, like a monthly report or an annual report of how many JCEPs that they use?
It's a little, they do, but they don't. And what I mean by that is this. They come at the end, but it's too late.
What do you mean?
At the end of the project, once the project is completed, then they send a list to show us who was on the project, and then they ask how many of these were JCEPs. At that point, there's no way you're going to be able to work with them to be able to get the participation that possibly could have been. So what we do, I met with OED and then the last administration to ask that they send the developers, when they come in, Let the developers give us a call, because as I said, we do some things differently. We make sure that we give them a capability statement. So we get the capability statements together, because on the Four Seasons, the company that's the contractor, they came, and they came from the beginning, and they asked how can we help, you know, them. So we gave them the capabilities of those businesses that could fit and actually do the work. And they asked and said it was very helpful for them to be able to get that. So that's why we would ask them to come, because there's 318 people, again, that are businesses within our in our pool, but all of them are not businesses that have been in business long enough to actually perform on large contracts. So you're just picking and calling. It doesn't give you enough information to know how long someone has been there. So to help out, worked with OED to ask them to let the developers come to us. Don't tell them to go out and look on the internet, because they're going to get frustrated. Because if you call five people and nobody is qualified or can't do it, then you get frustrated. And so those things didn't necessarily occur. The ask was there, but what they did, they would tell them to go out and look on the internet. After they looked on the internet, then they would say they either didn't find anybody or they made a whole bunch of phone calls, and there was good faith effort. But we don't know what good faith effort is if we've never worked with you to know that you actually put in the good faith. Because at the end of the day, to be honest, you could have just went down the list and wrote a whole bunch of numbers and said, this is what we did. So to help us, we asked that, you know, come to us, let us help. But normally, it didn't work that way. And at the end of the day, they would send us the list of who were on those projects. And then we would be able to say no, yay, or nay. They keep a different role, because on their list, they have they have an MBE, a WBE, or, you know, or a Hispanic. We don't have that. We don't do race specific. We're race neutral. So their form, it was different from our form, mm-hmm. in which, you know, we did provide them the information to say, hey, the form, we need to be consistent with these forms. However, that's something that could probably change in the future.
Well, I just, you know, share with my colleagues as we go forward and as we have an opportunity to maybe look at some type of recommendation to come back to us. Because I know I say it every time, those of you all that have been in our meetings, but I didn't know it was done on the back end. And I've had, you know, some contractors or vendors say they utilize them when they are filling out their application. And unfortunately, when if they're given or they're successful at getting the contract, they may not use them. You know, it's kind of like we all in it together, and then when the money comes or the contract comes, they're dismissed. Or the percentage, and do they do it on percentages as well, right?
Yes, and that's something that we changed in our language of the EBO language. We don't necessarily allow that they do that. Uh-huh. What we ask is that there's a form for mm-hmm. intent, the letter of intent. Mm-hmm. And the letter of intent form, what they would do is they would put down the JSAB name and then they would put down a percentage. Mm-hmm. So our language changed that doesn't allow them to do that. What they have to do is,
as of now,
okay. Well, when I came into the office,
okay.
We changed that language. And what has to happen is when you bid, and I'm a JSAB, and you're bidding and you're interested in me, you have to send me a scope of work, no different than the city sends a scope of work to you in the mm-hmm. bid document. So you send me a scope of work. I review that scope. Once I review it, then I turn around and give you my price. You don't give me the price. I give you the price. That has been a practice that had been going on for years and years when it comes to that. And there were bad actors that would get a JSAB and say, okay, we're going to put down this much, and then when they get the contract, they don't call a JSAB. But now when a JSAB gets a contract, our office reaches out to ask them, did you know that you were on this contract? Are you aware that this contract is how much you're supposed to be getting? So that way we can kind of control some of that. And for those bad actors, when that happens, we do recommend to procurement that those people are either removed off of the list or put on probation. But or if they didn't fulfill their JSAB requirement and they bid again and they're the lowest bidder, we don't recommend that they get the bid. It may cost the city a little up more because now they're not the low bidder. You're not looking at the low bidder anymore. Mm-hmm. But we don't want bad actors. We don't want people that's going to keep coming into the program and saying that you're using JSABs and take advantage of the program.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for the presentation. Do we have any questions? Yes.
Ms. Mason, thank you for your time. You call them bad actors, I call them crooks. You mentioned $300,000 were removed from JSAB. When was that? Why was it removed? When was it administration or city council?
It was administration. And it was the last, in our last, I didn't realize it was removed until it was time for us to do the budget for this time around, and I asked where those funds went. I don't think I ever got an answer, but it was the last administration, not now.
And restoring these funds would bump you up to what, 1.2, giving you the ability to make more loans available to these small and emerging businesses?
It would give us the opportunity to get a consultant to come in and to be able to manage the program on the outside. That funding would be for that consultant. And it was there while we were it was still sitting there while we were administering the program. So maybe they felt that it didn't need to be there, but our goal was always to go back out and not to keep the program in the office.
Really? Well, I will say that you have updated us with some information that I wasn't aware of. And that's why I really wanted to kind of do a wrap up. I think that our council president may be interested in, I'm not really sure. I don't know if there was a special committee. Do you remember? Have y'all seen? Well, we might need to bring it back. And I want to also bring Ms. Hodges up because if there is some legislation that we need to go back with, if you can come up, Ms. Hodges, because that's what this was really all about. When I came in, it just had been sitting there, and I think they was just kind of waiting for it to sunset and not come alive again. Mm-hmm. But this is important to the city when you talk about economic health. How do we, before you speak, I know, how do we make sure that, one, we develop programs that's going to help the small businesses, and what type of legislation is necessary based on the recommendations that you all have had over the last year or so to make sure as we go forward, whether this special committee go on or not, as we serve our term in the next 4 years, I want to make sure that the small businesses have a chance. But if we don't have any protection for them or any legislation, there's no way that they can even compete.
Right.
Can I say one more thing before? I did want to mention the one slide that we didn't get to, which is something that I came up, the local option gas tax.
Mm-hmm.
That is a program right now with JTA that we are supposed to be working with them with the JSAB program, that the $250 million that was given and awarded, council stated that they wanted to have a workforce development program, and the city of Jacksonville has 52 projects. The JTA has 17 projects out of that local option gas tax. Right now, JTA has gotten a consultant that has come in and told them exactly what needs to happen and to be able to help get JSEV and a workforce development plan together. And so those funds, though, that for the $250 million cannot be used for any programming or a consultant, but that is something that needs to be looked at on how does the city incorporate with JTA or provide funding to assist with that consultant to be able to do workforce development for those 52 projects that the city have. I just want to make sure you were aware of that.
Thank you.
Okay, so two things, Councilwoman Pittman. So the easier one is the legislation. So you heard Ms. Mason talk about the personal net worth. As we mentioned, there's a current moratorium on that. So the legislative action would be to remove that criterion from the code. So that would take legislation. So we can definitely move forward with that. And legally, our office supports the recommendation of Mason Tillman because there are some other state statutory laws coming from Tallahassee that may also make the personal net worth problematic. And so we would certainly support us removing that and updating it to use whatever marker they want to use, the revenues, whatever. But we I could draft that, and you could do that under your name as the chair of the special committee. The other thing I want to remind you of is when we did our earlier revisions to this part six, there is a JSEV monitoring committee. So, you know, there are two ways you can do this. You know, you can continue to have at the city council level a special committee like this where you're indefinite and you can always, you know, explore, investigate, make recommendations, take that to city council. But part of what you also did in your special committee was you refined the JSEV monitoring committee. So it might be worthwhile to have Ms. Mason's shop, you know, see how is this committee doing now that we've made changes, because the charge of that committee, each year, they are charged with reviewing the status of the program goals.
Right.
They're charged with looking at the percentage, the number of the dollars, the training programs, and the bond enhancement programs. They're comparing the achievements from prior program years, the maximum threshold amounts. So, you know, you already actually have a committee by code that is supposed to be doing this in theory. Now, how that committee is doing, I have no idea. That's what we would look to, you know, Ms. Mason to tell us. But that really would be your mechanism, because they can, this committee can make recommendations to the city council also. So you may just check in to see, and they have to provide you with a report as well. So I don't know where that committee is on that. So that's an idea. But if you want to move forward with the personal net worth removal of that language, the only other point I'll mention is by code, the disparity study was due August 31st. I would want to know if we need more time. If Ms. Mason thinks that we're going to need an additional 3 months or 6 months, I would much rather us comply with the code than not. But if Ms. Mason says the report's going to be delivered and finalized by September 15th, then okay, there are no penalties, you know, in the code if we don't meet that August 31st date. So that may be something else that you want to look at extending that date.
Well, that's why it was really important to have this meeting.
Correct.
Because I do know, and I don't know, Ms. Mason, if you can tell us if we need an extension, or do you think that they will have the Mason Tillman report done by August the 31st?
It's not going to be done by August 31st. I do know that. There's a possibility that it could be done by the end of September. I did reach out to Dr. Ramsey prior to coming over, and she may have responded after I left, because they're on California time, which is 3 hours behind. So, again, I don't want to speak out of turn. When I spoke to her last, you know, possibilities there, but it may end up going into October. I would rather get a more definite date to provide to the committee than doing, you know, speculation.
Well, I understand that you are retiring as well, and so I want to make sure that your office is still carrying the ball on that, and so, you know, I would like some recommendations, and if we need to expand the time. Can you give me, Lasekia, what options do we have, or what needs to happen,
right,
or an
so
opinion?
If we're gonna move forward with the personal net worth, this would just be one other component of the bill, extending the time. Mm-hmm. And I would say, you know, there's one thing to have a report delivered. It's another thing to have a final approved report. So even when we get that first draft of the report, there may be some back and forth. So I just, you know, add in about 30, 60 days. And so, you know, if you're willing to move forward on the personal net worth,
yes,
then this is something that we should definitely include as a component. At least it sounds like maybe 3 months,
yes.
And you give me a more refined, you know, date, we can add that in.
Okay. So is it something that I make as a recommendation from this meeting today, or is it something that I need to sit with you all to?
No,
okay.
I mean, so it's gonna be your legislation.
Yeah, okay.
So I'll draft it, it'll have your name on it.
Okay, great.
Since, you know, these are visiting council members.
Yes.
So, you know, you could do it singly with your name, and then I'll just work with Dinah to sort of refine that date. But it just sounds like, even our best case scenario, we get a deliberate report by September 30th, you know, that report is important because there are legal aspects relative to the race-based program.
Mm-hmm.
So OGC is gonna need to look at that report, make sure we've got all the information we need should the council decide to move in that path. And so, yeah, I wanna give myself an additional 30 days from
sure.
the delivery date. So I'll add that to your legislation.
Okay. Well, thank you all so very much. And we are at almost the end of our meeting. So today we've heard the updates and recommendations that's gonna help make this program even stronger, and some legislation. So I hope as we move forward on City Council and through our committees that we can have this conversation, as well as some accountability from DIA and OED. As we talk about opportunities for the small businesses. I'll open it up right now, and we'll see if we have any comments or questions from our public. Does anyone have? Can you please come to the podium and state your name and your question? How you doing?
Wonderful.
Good.
My name is Yolanda Copeland, and my question is, with the study, I'm actually was a participant in the Jack's Chamber program that they held earlier this year to help small businesses to be certified through the JSET program. It was successful. So my only concern was, and I haven't submitted my full package yet, there were a few deliverables on my end, but I was concerned about delivering this notebook that has my Social Security number, my address, my birth certificate, and these other important items just over, to someone else. And the question is there now a secure portal or a more secure way that these documents can be submitted rather than hand-to-hand? That's
gotcha.
My question.
I'll let Ms. Mason answer that question.
I think in that, I'm sorry, ma'am, I didn't get your name.
Yolanda.
Miss Yolanda. What she's referring to was a pilot program in which we had in the office, and that program was supposed to deliver us a system that they would be able to, what she participated in at the chamber, to provide the applications
mm-hmm.
through a blockchain encrypted system. However, we did not get that. That was not a deliverable. So we don't have a system that it goes through. That was not provided in the deliverables of that pilot. So each time that they did bring applications, they brought them hand-delivered like everybody else. So we get applications with people's personal information, birth certificate. We get those all the time. That's how we actually receive certifications to help people. But do we have a system that does that?
We don't.
No, we don't.
Okay. Well, Ms. Copeland, I would hope that I don't know, and maybe you have to schedule a meeting with Ms. Mason's office to see if that is an option for you, because the work that you do in our community it doesn't go unnoticed. And so in order for you to expand what you're doing in the community, you need to know what kind of options you have. So thank you for asking that question. Any other question? Ms. Vanessa?
This was wonderful, and thank you for allowing questions from the public.
Can you introduce your whole name?
My name is Vanessa Cullens Hopkins, and I have two questions. One is about the disparity study. When do you think the public is going to be able to take a look at that disparity study? Do we have to wait until you get to a final, or will we be able to look at drafts of the disparity study? And then my second question really has to do with, how do we talk to our council members about our support for this particular program and the changes as it relates to not looking at personal net worth, but looking at gross revenue over 3 years? And I'm asking this from the standpoint of the Sunshine Law and ex parte, and I'm really concerned that only three of the council members are here to hear this very, very important set of presentations. And so how can they talk among themselves about the need to move forward according to the recommendations that Ms. Mason has given and that also are gonna come out of the disparity study? Can you address it from the standpoint of the Sunshine Law? That confuses me in terms of, how do you have meetings and communications about this?
So one, I will tell you, Vanessa, is we invited council members. I'm not sure if there was a conflict in their schedules, and I also mentioned it last night after the council meeting, because I do think this is a priority, and if it's not important for us to assist our small businesses and educate. And it's an ongoing, because I got to tell you, just since our last meeting with Ms. Hodges and Ms. Mason, a lot of good things has happened, you know, from the 100 day to the recommendations until the legislation. And that's really what we were hoping. We thought that we were going to just stop the meetings, you know, a couple years ago. But because there was still work to be done, at that time, Councilman Hazuri, this was a priority for him. And he had asked Councilman Newby to carry on. And, you know, I think it's something that we can talk to our president about, to see if he has an appetite. And I would love for our mayor to also weigh in on it. I see staff from her department, because we as a council can't just carry this by ourselves. So I just wanna say that. I think if it goes up the chain and it means that much, you know, to the rest of our council members and the mayor's office, it could get done. You all know what's in the pipeline. Y'all know what's in the pipeline. And the mayor's office, I mean, she's just getting here, but the economic infusion that we need for our city, the small businessmen and women is what makes up the economic development for our community. So I say this because I need you all to make calls, you know, to your city council members. We will do a summary, a highlight summary of today's meeting. And if y'all can get the small businessmen to call them, because it is a call to action at this point after today's meeting. It is a call to action. And so I am asking you all to do that. And I'll be happy to have another meeting, a notice meeting, specifically for our council members to do a overview of what you heard today. Because I got to tell you, I'm excited. And that also means that we need to talk to our Public Works Department to make sure that they're on board with what we're trying to do. Any other questions from the audience? I can't. Yes, if you would, thank you.
So just really quick, in addition to what Councilwoman Pittman said, keep in mind when we file legislation, there is a public hearing that will be had. That's when the public can come and the public can give comments to all 19 as they're sitting there at the public meeting. And then there are committee meetings where you can also come and you can also, if the chairs permit, to give comment during that stage. The public records, it's a public record. Unless there's exemptions that apply, to my knowledge, I checked with Diana Mason, there's nothing confidential in this report. So as soon as we receive a draft, if somebody makes a public records request, we would have to release that information. We'll make it clear to you that it's a draft, meaning, you know, it's not anything you can rely on, it's not anything that the city's approved, but if you ask for it, you know, by law, we'd have to turn that over. Okay?
Okay. Again, thank you all for being here today. I think we covered a lot. Oh, I'm sorry. Would you come on, Mr. Cook? Are there any other members from the audience that would like to speak? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cook.
Good afternoon.
Just introduce your whole name, just for the records.
William Coleman IV. So my question is about blockchaining. So based on research, dollars were developed to were used to develop and train businesses on blockchaining technology and usage. My question would be, what are the results of blockchaining program? And the follow-up is, if we are using dollars to put back into blockchaining, how much are we using? If not, should this be pursued by the Office of Economic Development?
Well, I'm going to tell you, as your chair, I know nothing about blockchain, but I don't know if Miss Mason could come about blockchain, because I have no idea what that means.
It's akin to the previous question about the program. Do we have
that
the system?
Okay, that's what it's called, so, blockchain. Yeah,
well, that was the deliverable. There was a pilot, and the pilot deliverable was to provide a blockchain encrypted system that we would be able to receive applications through that system where it would be safe. Mm-hmm. And we could communicate back and forth through that.
Okay.
That did not occur. Okay. So we don't have blockchain. We don't have a blockchain system. It was a pilot. It's no longer in effect. There will be no more dollars that will be expended toward that program.
And how much did we spend any dollars on the program?
$125,000.
And what was the deliverables?
That was the deliverable that we did not receive that deliverable.
Oh. Okay. Okay, thank you very much. And that, go ahead, Councilwoman.
Thank you, Councilmember Pittman, for hosting this meeting. I appreciate you. Ms. Mason, my questions are too numerous for me to ask here, so okay. I will schedule some a meeting within the next 2 weeks for the two of us, so I can get more information and understand this program better, so that I'll be able to disseminate information to my district.
Yes, ma'am.
and confer my ideas and thoughts to my colleagues. So
yes,
thank you.
You're welcome.
And I would also say to you, those of us that will be hosting town hall meetings soon, this might be an opportunity just to get the information out to the businessmen and women again in our district. I know your district has expanded, so has mine. Have you had your town hall meeting yet? Okay, but this may be an opportunity. It's coming up? Okay, so again, thank you all so much for being here and support from the mayor's office. I really appreciate you being here to join us today. Thank you all for coming.